The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at WeightWatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk. Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers.
I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Shut Your Face with your host, me, Bree. Thank you so much for subscribing to this and listening to this and being supportive of this. It means the absolute world. It's the coolest thing ever. So thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Let's get into it.
Hello, Elise. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I found you on TikTok because you are a lady farrier.
Yes.
Can you just tell me a little bit about how did this happen? Like, what brought you to doing farrier work? Because it's badass as hell to see a girl do it. Like,
thank you.
Not a lot of women do it.
And more are coming into the industry, actually. Maybe in the last, I don't know, 5 or so years, probably even more than that, the amount of women that are entering this trade has like doubled.
That's
which
awesome.
Is incredible. Yeah. I will totally be honest, I never wanted to be a farrier. I remember being in the barns like as a little kid and seeing what farriers did and smelling like the hot fit and thinking, that's disgusting. I don't want to do that. Like, they're all sweaty guys, you know, you see all that. But as I kind of grew up, I knew that I wanted to do something with horses. My plan, like most of us horse girls, was to go to vet school. And that was my career path or my trajectory for a long time, up until my senior year of college when I decided to do something else. I didn't want to do another 4 years of school. So I graduated and I went the complete opposite direction. I actually ran a hog farm in North Carolina of like 4,000 head.
Oh, wow.
Did that for a little while. When I kind of, my husband's in the military, so we moved all over the country. When we came back to Virginia, it was kind of like, I need to get back to horses somehow.
Yeah.
And my mom actually, and anybody that's heard this story, you're going to hear it again, but my mom is the reason that I became a farrier. She was kind of pushing, I was planning on the vet school route again, and she's like, go to farrier school, be a farrier. And I'm like, I don't know about all that. So... But I was open to the opportunity or the career, and I went to a clinic that was a dual vet farrier clinic, and that blew my mind. I did not realize how involved a farrier is to whole horse care. It's not just putting a mechanic on the bottom of the foot or trimming away excess tissue. It's, we have an effect across the entire body. We can help lame horses become sound. It's just, it's incredible the things that we have an effect on. And I never realized that until this clinic. And that was it for me. I went to farrier school and I have not turned back since.
And you're right though. I don't think a lot of people realize how much it does affect the horse. I think they just stay
everything.
In that same mentality of, we're just going to trim your neck. Like they think it's just nail trimming, you know?
Yes.
So that's cool. That's glad that you kind of focused on that. So, back to your beginning. So did you grow up in horses?
Not really. So I'm the oldest of five.
Oh.
And horses are a luxury. We know this.
Right.
They're expensive. My mom had me in lessons when I was 9 years old, and I was immediately like, oh my gosh, I have to have horses in my life. I tried to convince my parents to buy me a pony, specifically a white Connemara that I was going to name Snowball. I did a book report on it for myself to, like, tell my mom I'm responsible. I can have a horse. No, I have that's no idea what I was doing.
That's completely horse girl normal. Like, that's normal. We all had those dream ponies.
Yes, yes. I don't know why Snowball. Like, so original, I know. But that was my goal. Didn't have horses growing up, but tried to lessen as much as I could. I would ride anything that anybody would let me ride. In college, I competed in IHSA. When I graduated college, I would exercise ride for, again, anybody that would let me ride their horses.
Cool.
At that time, I was in Colorado, so we'd go backcountry riding all over the place. It was incredible. I got out of horses for a little while, and actually probably 2 years ago, started riding again, and just one lesson a week as much as I can. And on Tuesday, I actually bought my own horse. So.
Oh, congratulations. Yay.
So now we're going to be involved in horses as much as I can.
That's really cool, because now you can shoe your own horse.
I shod him, and I've been working on him. He was a client's horse before I bought him. It was a weird experience to shoe him as my own horse. I was like, man, you better stand, because how embarrassing to have a horse as a farrier that doesn't stand well. Like, hopefully you have good feet. He has pretty good feet, but it was different.
I am like, I obviously was sheltered in the horse industry because, I mean, I was lucky because we grew up around them, but the horror stories that I've heard as far as farriers and vets and other people's horses, like my parents, our horses were ready and there for you, and we helped you. And the horror stories I have seen, you guys have to go get them out of the field. You have to take, this dude had to take fly boots off of, I'm like.
Wet, muddy, disgusting, way in the back 40, nothing's prepared, we're on time, they're not.
We obviously did it different than y'all, because we would never do that. Like, it was just wild to see what y'all put up with. And then, you know, on top of that, you're a female in a predominantly male part of the industry. What are some of the, have you had any pushbacks on that? I mean, obviously you've probably been said some stuff, you know, but have you had, like, what's your biggest pushback that you've encountered? I'm sure you have.
Honestly, I really haven't experienced too much of that. That could be my personality, because I come across like I'm not going to deal with that. And I also, I came into the industry a little older. I was 27 when I went to farrier school, so I had experienced some life. I wasn't naive to the world. Most of the careers I've had have been in male-dominated industries, so that wasn't anything I was too worried about. I have had sideways comments, some comments from women actually, of like, you know, what is it being, how can you do this? You know, you might not be strong enough to do this. And I'm like, well, it's not really about being strong. It's technical skills, and then having the wherewithal to deal with large prey animals and being aware of your surroundings and all the stuff that kind of goes in with that. It doesn't, yeah, you have to be strong to some extent, but I know some girls that are 5 foot nothing that are trimming these draft horses like it's nobody's business. It doesn't really, strength and stuff like that doesn't really matter so much, because also you're not manhandling the animals. You shouldn't be.
Right. No. You're absolutely correct. To me, it would be more, you would obviously want to hire off of education, like what you know and what you can provide. Like, back to the whole vet and farrier school thing. Like, if I knew that, if I had to choose between two farriers, one that's been there and one that hasn't been there, I'd probably go with the one that's been there, woman or not. But I'm not surprised that you said you've had women side comments, because, you know, women can be worse than men in all reality. They really
yes.
can.
Yes. Even on the social media post that you commented on, I've had more issues with women than I did with men.
I
have more women followers too, but it was interesting to see that kind of pushback over something where, you know, I'm having fun, I'm showcasing strength, flexibility, power. Why are women saying something negative about that? And women farriers. I was like, wait, girls, hello.
Well, it's so controversial, because you've got, it's usually, I've dealt with this a lot, so I understand completely how you feel, and it makes no sense, because we should be supporting each other. We preach to support each other. Here you've got this badass chick killing it as a farrier. Like, to me, I'm like, this is awesome, this is great, way to go. But you will have that one girl or a group of girls that'll question it and like put it down, and it's like, No, we're supposed to be for each other here, not against each other. The most you're going to get from a man is some comment. You can usually just kind of like, okay, whatever.
Brush that off.
Yeah, like, okay. You know, but I think we expect more out of women, and that's why it's just so disheartening. But, all right, so now back to the farrier. You do all types of animals. You do all of, not animals, you do all types of horses. So you do drafts, ponies, all of them?
Yep, everything in between, donkeys, mules, goats, sheep, the occasional pig, but I don't advertise that because they're not as fun.
You trim pig? I didn't know this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Goats, pigs, and sheep, I prefer to teach owners how to do that because it's a lot easier for them to maintain versus a horse, a donkey, or a mule. So if I can teach them to do it, I'll have them do it. Sometimes they just want me to keep them on rotation, and that's fine too. But yeah, all of them need their feet done. Not as often, sometimes, depending on their environment, because they're moving around more. So the more they're able to move, the more they wear their feet. Pigs are a whole different situation. They scream the entire time. And it's very loud. Some don't. The house trained ones that just like roll over, you rub their bellies and they roll over and you can get their feet done, that's great. That's, in my experience, not been the majority of pigs, so I try not to do pigs if I can avoid it.
You have got to be able to have not a lot, I mean, a whole lot of patience, but also the ability to drown out certain things, because I would like, I can't handle it. I can't handle my dog barking too much, because it's like, it feels like chaos and anxiety, so I don't know how you do that. That's awesome.
Military-grade headphones.
There you go. So what made you get out of the swine, you know, industry? Like, what, I'm assuming you raise them for meat, right?
So yes, it was mostly a genetics operation, but anything that didn't go back into the herd was in meat production.
Oh, okay. So what made you get out of that? And I mean,
truthfully, I was 22. I was in charge of 5 employees. They were all men and 20 years my senior. And I was in a town of 5,000 people, and I had no life, no social life. I worked 80 hours a week. It wore on me.
Right.
And my husband at the time, well, he was a boyfriend, I think, at the time. He was stationed in Alaska, and I said, well, I'm just going to take this opportunity and
go to Alaska.
Move to Alaska. So
that's cool.
I kind of took the jumping off of him moving up there as like, okay, I can get out of this for a little bit and do something else.
They have horses up there. I mean, I know I say
they do.
I know, because you're like,
they do.
I just said that like it's stupid, but your average person would be like, they don't have horses up there, but they do, and it's like, that's cool.
Actually, where I lived, we moved one time while we were up there. There was a horse in our neighborhood, just right down the road. I didn't ever interact with them. I wanted to knock on the door like, hey, can I ride your horse? But
right.
Yeah, there's horses there.
But, you know, you just, like, your average mind, my stupidity's coming out. Like, Alaska, they wouldn't have any, you know, but, yeah, they do. That's cool. That's cool to learn that. So, what are some of your goals, your, like, business goals that you have for the next couple of years that you want to achieve?
I would love to be able to do more than just be under a horse. So, whether that's teaching in some way, capacity, developing a farrier school program, expanding in a teaching way. I think that's kind of the avenue I'm going down. I would like to do, I'm trying to think of like end goals, right? Because I don't know if I want to be under a horse for the rest of my life, because it's very difficult work and it does break down your body. So if I can stay in the farrier realm, but not be bent over all day long, that's kind of what I'd like to do. I haven't quite figured out what that looks like yet. But that's my general plan.
Probably could do farrier school and clinics and stuff. That would be really cool to be able to offer that. If you've gone the vet route as well, that type of knowledge is not out there a lot, so that's really cool. What's probably one of the hardest cases you've ever had to encounter?
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers.
I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
Counter, as far as a horse is concerned, like, you know, they had issues and then you corrected as far as corrective shoeing.
There's been a couple. The one that comes to the forefront of my mind is he hasn't had an abscess, and at the time, I think I was maybe 2 years out of farrier school, so truly just figuring out what this is all about. Because, you know, in any type of schooling, you're in this nice little bubble. There's people to hold your hand, there's people to watch over you, and then you get thrust out into the real world. And not only are you doing something that's incredibly technical, but you're building a business. And people don't, I think, always think about that. You are running your own business, you're a small business owner, and there's a lot that goes on with that as well. So trying to combine all of it sometimes can be like way overwhelming. So I was in the overwhelmed stage, and this horse came in, he had blown an abscess. It was pretty large. It was all the way up to the coronary band and all the way down to the hoof wall. So the entire front of the hoof capsule just blown apart. We debrided that all. The vet suggested corrective shoeing. I put that on. And then I was let go as the farrier once he started to stabilize. A year went by, I got called again, hey, can you come back and work on this horse? And at this point, that abscess had progressed into full-blown pedal osteitis, which is an infection of the coffin bone. So not only am I dealing with a horse that has massive necrotic tissue, but now it's affecting the coffin bone, and I have to figure out how to clean that all up. You know, the vet's involved. I need to correctively shoe this horse and manage client expectations. And it was a lot. As a newer farrier, it was quite a bit. And at one point, the vet came out and said, you know, if she can't keep him sound, we need to put him down. So then it became like, I have to keep this horse alive somehow, or else he's gonna take a little dirt nap, and I don't want that.
Right.
And the owners didn't want to put a bunch of money into this horse. So now I have to manage that as well. How do I correct this? How do I keep this horse sound and comfortable? How do I keep him out of the grave? And how do I not spend their money? Like, you know, they can't afford it and I want to help this horse.
Right.
So it was pretty difficult. And then it became, the horse was very difficult to work on because he was in pain and they couldn't afford sedation or didn't want to afford sedation. So we went from shoeing, and that's when I started going into a different composite route. I brought casting into the picture, I brought gluons into the picture, and we were able to get this horse sound. His hoof wall grew back down, and now he's giving trail rides to little kids.
Oh,
and it's
wow.
been 5 years since that happened.
That's awesome.
So it was very stressful.
I mean, I don't think, you know, props to you for putting the client and the horse ahead of everything else, because not a lot of people do that. You know, I don't think people realize that that is a huge difference between just a business operating, because you could have just said, okay, do this, whatever,
yeah.
you know, not really care, versus a really good business that you want on your side that's going to go, all right, look, we got to stay under X amount, like all the stuff that you said. So props for that. That's really awesome. And glad that you got him sound.
We didn't think, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking there's no way. I mean, this is so involved. This is necrotic coffin bone. This is, the horse is out 24/7 in a pasture. He's not managed in a stall. And I'm dealing with management issues as well as all of the other things that are going on. So,
well, the fact that you have to know all of this medical stuff just blows my mind, because it goes right back to what we said in the beginning. Like, you don't just trim their nails. I mean, like, it's all
this
stuff.
Are so much more than I think they give themselves credit for and people give them credit for. I mean, we, for example, my clients will call me before they call the vet sometimes, because they know that I will know some things. Now, I have no problem saying, you need to call your vet. This
right,
is not a me
right.
thing. But I get asked about feed. I get asked about pasture management. What kind of fences should be put up for horses? I mean, you name it. Farriers are getting asked these questions. We have to know, we don't have to know, but we know a lot about a lot, including managing this horse and, you know, top down, bottom up, front to back. It's not just the foot, it's the entire body. And it's a lot.
I think think that's so cool, though, that you guys know all this stuff and that you have to know, like, if you want to really do a good job, acknowledge the fact that you need to know this stuff. So that's really cool. Now, as far as your horse career, we just got this new horse. What are your plans with that? Is it just something to kind of let the stress out? Or are you wanting to get back into the show pen?
Right now, he's a little bit of a project. He needs to gain some weight and some muscle. Of course, I bought a 6-year-old off-the-track thoroughbred, and he needs, who's 17 hands, so I bought a dinosaur.
Jesus Christ. I don't know how tall ones.
From the ground, he didn't look that tall, and then I sat on him, and I'm like, wow, whoa, this is a far fall.
Well, how tall are you, if you don't mind?
5'7".
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, all right, you're not, like, super short or anything, but still,
he fits me really well. I had always said, like, if I'm going to get a horse, it's going to be a big horse. And then I was like, I'm never going to get a horse. Because, first of all, I have to shoe my own horse? Absolutely not. And I see the good, the bad, and the ugly every single day, so... And then I'm like, well, this is just an opportunity. And of course, I bought, like, the farrier checklist of what not to buy. I bought that.
Oh, well.
But he's so sweet. He's such a good boy. So right now, it's just maintenance. We're going to get him back into good fitness and things like that. And then probably just, like, hacking around and maybe a little bit of hunter flat showing. And we'll see. We'll see what he likes to do.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I think it's always kind of cool to see, you know, some people... It's like you have all types of horse owners. You have some that just want them to chill out and clear their mind, and then some really get into the whole show ordeal. So, hold on. What's the farrier checklist of things that you don't buy as a farrier?
Oh, the ones that are, like, a little crazy.
Horse checklist. Feet.
Yeah, got you.
No white hooves.
That's an old wives' tale that people still think about.
I do. Am I wrong?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's the same structure. The reason I think people think that white feet are worse is because you see more with a white foot. Like, for example, you'll see bruising on a white foot more significantly than you do a black foot, but the black foot still has bruising.
So, okay, this is awesome. All right, so that is an old wives' tale.
It is.
All right.
Like, what is it, white feet feed into the crows or something like that?
Well, I know what you're talking about, but we just grew up. That's just what we were told, if they had white feet. And it was because she had more problems than the horse that didn't have any white feet. So it just was like a thing, and people agreed. But I didn't know that that's false. So what's other little, like, wise tales that you've heard that are false as far as...
That's probably the biggest one. I hear that all the time, and I always am like, no, guys, that's not real. Using bleach or something really caustic to get rid of thrush. It's probably another thing.
Yeah.
People just bleach the heck out of everything because that's what they used to do. But that, I mean, it does kill the bad stuff. Don't get me wrong. But it also kills all the good, healthy tissue. So don't do that.
What? Yeah, I learned a little bit of what thrush is. But what is it exactly? It's where it's infection of the frog, right?
Yeah, it's just a bacterial infection of the frog. Now, the bacteria lives in the ground. And in wet, humid environments like North Carolina, like Virginia, we have thrush. I mean... I rarely see a horse that doesn't have thrush. It kind of depends on the severity of it. I'll have clients say that, oh man, I can smell that really badly. You know, that really stinks. And I'm like, if I can't smell it, it's not bad enough. If I can smell it, then it's bad.
Oh, I bet you could. I bet there's abscess and stuff. Because abscess is basically a sack of pus, right? From an infection that's inside. Okay.
Yep.
I just wanted to make sure that I was right, because I thought white hooves were bad, and that's wrong. I'm glad you just cleared that up, because that's actually so now the next time I hear somebody say that, I'm going to be like, nope.
Yeah.
You're wrong.
It probably, your horse might have had some, like, genetic component or a nutritional component or something else that was involved, but you're seeing it more with the white feet, so you just associate the negative. But it's not, they're the same. It's just pigmentation.
That's so cool now. I feel smarter. like fixed. So now, as far as the going from the hog farm to the horse business, did you see a big difference as far as how you deal with those types of different animal owners? Do you think horse owners are different as far as feet care are concerned compared to other animals, or no?
Yeah, from the little bit I've known from, like, hogs and livestock, horses are considered pets. So they are cared for more than an animal that's going to go into production of some sort. Now, technically, through our government, horses are livestock. So, you know, they're ruled over differently than like an actual dog or cat are, but for most horse owners, that's their baby, that's their pet. So they want to take care of them like their cat or their dog.
Right.
Versus a pig or a cow.
Got you. So the medical expertise doesn't really play as much as far as other livestock is concerned.
People care more about taking care of their horses. Or if a cow comes up with something, they're going to probably just say like, okay, we'll go. Well, I shouldn't say that. I know that there are farmers out there that care a lot about their livestock too, because that's how they're making money.
Right.
Whereas horses, we're not really, most people are not making money off of their horses.
Right. Yeah. No. We don't want it to sound like that. I feel like probably because they are being raised for consumption, it's a lot different, because that's a big take in the horse industry here in the last couple of years. Some people think that they should bring back horse slaughter because mm-hmm. they are considered livestock. And, you know, you do have some horses that, you have a lot of people that consider them pets, and then you do have some people that consider them livestock. But at the end of the day, I think animal welfare is not letting something suffer if you don't have to let it suffer.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we see a lot of animals suffer because people can't afford the care that they need, and they go into kill pens anyway. Or they're going into a pipeline. I mean, still with a kill pen, they're probably going somewhere else in another country to be slaughtered anyway. And they're having to suffer through that whole thing versus euthanizing them immediately.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, like, it's a hot take because I've seen a lot of different arguments on it. You know, some people are like, oh, keep them up and stuff. But then that boils down to how much money it takes to keep them alive. It's almost like, you know, like the lady in Georgia. Did you see the lady in Georgia that they kept alive because she had a kid or she was pregnant?
I did, yeah.
And it was apparently a law. Now, I mean, if you think about that whole situation, her family has to pay for that, which is astronomical. I can't even imagine the bill. One, two, she was basically like a microwave for another human. And three, you know, is there not a chance to go, okay, well, this is not right regardless of the law?
It gets really convoluted very easily, and that's tough.
Yeah.
I'm glad that I'm not in that position, because I don't know how I would handle that at all.
Me either. It was one of those things. It was like, what do you do? Like, which one?
Yeah, what do you
like,
do?
How do you pick?
What's right?
Yeah, which one's more important? You don't want to sit there and go, okay, well, her life is more important, but this child's life's more important. And then I saw a TikTok where a lady was like, this child, that what they're trying to keep alive, it's not going to stay alive even after it's born, because it's going to have so many problems. And it's like, you know, at what point do you want to go, I had a Doberman that had cancer, and I promised myself, I said, when he gets to the point where he is uncomfortable, I am not going to keep him alive for my own selfishness.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. I refuse to do it. And I remember
my boy right here, he's actually on my arm. Same thing. He had cancer, and when he told us when he was ready to go, and that was that. We were not going to keep him for longer than he needed to be, because I could not watch that. Absolutely not.
Right. Like, I can understand.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
And they can, you know, like vets and stuff can easily sell you a surgery to save your animal, which I get it. I would absolutely consider that. But it's almost like, am I keeping them here just for my own comfort, you know?
And, you know, as farriers, to kind of talk about what we experience too, sometimes we have to have those conversations with our clients. And it becomes this is where compassion fatigue really hits us, because we understand quality of life. We see the light go out in their eyes, and we have to say, we can't tell them to put the animal down, but we can have those conversations with them. And sometimes people push and they keep pushing and they keep pushing. And it gets to the point where we have to put our foot down and say, like, we can't keep working on these animals because it's not safe for us. It's not safe for them or fair. And that gets really tough. It's really tough. I do not envy veterinarians at all for having to actually be active on those conversations and then be the ones to euthanize animals. That's why I didn't want to go to vet school. I mean, that was a major component of that, because that just, I would die. I would cry every single time.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. There's no way that I could do it, because I would absolutely know. So what is something, I'm glad you just kind of brought that up, what is something that you wish the general public knew that farriers go through or have to deal with that they don't think you normally would have to deal with?
We care about your animals. Those animals become our family. We see them once every 4, 5, 6 or longer weeks. We're there more than veterinarians are. We notice the things that maybe even horse owners don't notice, because we are able to see them intermittently. Whereas, you know, as an owner, sometimes we're looking at the horse every single day and we don't notice little things. Your farrier does. When things go wrong, we want to know about it because we care. Like, it's not just, for most of us, we're not just going and running our business and, yeah, we see the horse, we get our do our job, we get paid, we leave. We think about them. We dream about your horses. That's free. They live in our heads rent-free. We think about them all the time. I don't think people quite understand that it's not just, you don't get into farrier work for the money. You get into it because you love the animals.
Right.
You have to love the animals.
Right.
It's too hard to not love the animals.
Right. No, for sure. I mean, they have to deal with all of that. I can only imagine. But you're right. People do need to know that. But, you know, I can understand. It's probably hard for you to have to separate that emotion from the business aspect, and then also keep the emotional aspect in mind for your client, because like you just said, it's not a one and done. It ain't like you just hopped into the gas station and grabbed a drink and that's the only customer interaction. You are seeing these same people over and over and over and over, and so that's got to be a lot for you to have to process and keep.
We have to compartmentalize a lot. You know, we're dealing with, for example, when I have one of my clients will know if she listens to this podcast that this is, I'm referring to her, but I've had very sick horses, and I'm dealing with the very sick horse, the affectionately known as the emotion at the end of the lead rope, their owner. I'm dealing with other equine professionals, and I have to manage all of that. We have to manage all of that and make sure the horse is getting seen and advocated for and taken care of while dealing with all the outside stuff as well. And that can get really challenging. I mean, you really have to be strong in what you're doing. And be able to communicate and articulate as a professional, which I think a lot of younger farriers need to understand, and owners need to understand that we're not trying to just take your money and run. Like, we truly are trying to do the best for your horses.
I think that might boil down to the fact that they're not aware of the extensive medical knowledge that goes with it. You know what I mean? Which is sad, because, you know, all professions should be treated professionally, but I'm just saying, I think if more people knew that you guys don't just trim nails, it would probably be a lot better. Now, what is something, as far as, you know, I know we just talked about being able to compartmentalize things and keep things separate in the business and the emotion aspect of it. What's probably one of the hardest conversations you ended up having to have with a client?
One that involves, it's time to put your horse down. And it didn't go the way that I was hoping that it would. This horse, and this person is no longer a client, kind of because of the situation, but the pony was doing okay. We were trimming, she was wearing boots, that was all well and good. But then the owner kept changing the cycle. Instead of staying on a strict 4-week schedule, would go 8 weeks, and then would go back to 4 weeks, and then would go 16 weeks, and then go 8 weeks, and it was never consistent. And then she would complain about the horse not doing well. Well, I can only do so much when I'm not able to be consistent, especially given a medical situation like laminitis, and it needs to be managed properly, not only by me, but by the owner. This pony was out in a grass pasture 90% of the day. So I'm not able to do everything that you want me to do when you are also not helping the situation. And it got to the point where one day I was there and I hadn't seen this pony in a while because, again, she was not staying on a schedule. Brought the pony in and she was dead in the eye. And if you've never seen an animal that is just not alive anymore in their eyes, like, that is heartbreaking. I brought up the conversation. I didn't even trim the pony that day because I'm like, there's really no point to do this. If
I'm like wanting to cry for you right now.
It was awful. It was absolutely awful. And I said to the owner, like, she is not okay. There is no life in her eyes anymore. I think it's a really good time to seriously discuss end of life options. And she looked me in my eye and said, she gets up, she eats, she drinks. I'm not putting her down. And I said, okay. And then I left. And that was, part of it is like, I felt like I was the only one that would take care of this pony the way that it needed to be taken care of. And also my mental health was declining because I'm going out there and seeing the state of this animal every single time I'm out there. And that was, I'd go home and talk to my husband and tell him all this stuff and just like vent about it and be so upset about it. And nothing was changing. And I finally had to just leave. So it was hard to leave that animal in that state. And it was hard to have that conversation with the client and then be so disappointed by her reaction. And now it's her animal. She's allowed to do what she wants with it. But it just, that was not fun. We've had to do that.
I can only imagine like how you feel. You're hopeless. There's nothing you can do. There's literally nothing you can do. And that sucks so bad. And I'm sorry you had to go through that. But on the flip side, I'm glad that you're able to handle that. Because back to kind of what you said before, you know, farriers don't get enough recognition for the things that they do have to handle as far as a business is concerned. Because you're right. A lot of people just go, oh, okay, well, just come trim the horse. It's whatever. But they don't think about all of the other stuff that goes with it. And back to your body. You guys put yourself through your body. I mean, your body goes through a lot to do what you do all day.
Yes.
There was one farrier I remember. I swear to God, that dude probably worked. He shoot our horses for a while. He's a great guy. He worked literally from 6 a.m. to like 8 p.m. at night every single day.
Oh, that's crazy.
I'm sitting there thinking to myself, and I'm not putting down computer work or office work. All work is the same. But when you're physically moving your body, it is different. And I just sit there thought to myself, how the hell is this dude still like constantly in and out and stuff like that? So that's almost like props to that, because I need a break. I need a chiropractor.
That's a lot. I remember my mentors and my instructors when I was in farrier school saying, don't do that. Do not be under 20 plus horses, because how good is the quality of your work from the first horse to the 20th horse? It's probably not as good. And you break yourself down faster for what? They always said, charge more, work under less horses. And I did not listen. In the first couple of years of my career, I worked on way too many horses. I was working 6 days a week, sun up to sundown. I was interning. I was building my own clientele. And then it got to a point where I'm like, I'm burnt out and I've only been doing this for 3 years. This is not sustainable.
Right.
So I had to do a whole big reevaluation. But props to those guys that do that. I mean, more power to you. It's not for me though.
But you're right though. It's hard to say no. I guess like that's probably what it boils down to too. You know, if you're brand new or what, even if you've been in business for a long time, you don't want to say no because you don't want to disappoint the client and you don't want to hurt your business. And there's all these things that you think about, because I've been through the same thing. You know, like I've taken things I probably shouldn't have taken and it ended up biting me in the butt, even though I was trying to help the whole time. You know, and it's like, okay. People don't realize that there are people behind these businesses, like actual humans that have feelings. And we like,
yes,
you know, what? You know, it's just not mechanic like that. So,
yeah.
But anyways, now what's some advice that you would have for somebody that may or may not be getting into the farrier industry that you would give to them as far as small lessons or anything that they would do?
Probably exactly what my mentors told me to do that I didn't do. Listen to your mentors, because they are not saying things just to hear themselves speak. They're saying things because they've had experience in that and they do not want you to go through the same experience. So listen to your mentors. intern or work with or ride along with as many people as you can. You will learn a lot about what to do and what not to do. And you can pick and choose things that work well for you and your business and figure out what direction you want to go. Because the beautiful thing about this career is you can do whatever you want within it. It is so individualized. You don't have to be a steel farrier. You don't only have to do barefoot trims. You could do composites. You could not do shoeing at all. You could do body work. You can, whatever. You can make this career how you want it. Do not work on bad horses. That is not the farrier's responsibility to train horses. It is not worth a trim or a shoe price to be in the hospital, ever, ever. Say no, learn how to say no, and be comfortable saying no. That has been my goal of the last 2 years, is to say no and walk away and know when to walk away and not push myself to the point of exhaustion, burnout, or even injury. It's just not worth it. I have a life, I would like to live my life, and one horse is not gonna take that away from me. So say no. Be really good at running a business, first and foremost. Figure out what you want to make, because you can make as much as you want. You can make as little as you want. This could be a hobby. This could be a full-time six-figure career. Again, you can make it what you want to make, but you need to figure out how to run a business first. Learn how to invest in yourself and how to spend the money that you make. It's not just bringing in money. You got to learn what to do with it. Inventorying your supplies, become really good at that. Also, don't be afraid to run whatever rig you want. You don't have to have the big truck and the big trailer and 50,000 shoes in the truck. You could have, I shot out of a Hyundai Elantra when I first started, and then I had a Tacoma. It doesn't have to be big and fancy. It's what you do with the materials that are in the rig, right, and your skill and your technical abilities. And that kind of goes into investing in yourself. Go to clinics, learn how to do things, become well-rounded, and probably finally stay open-minded. You have to learn from every single person, whether you agree with it or not, especially if you don't agree with it, because you can try what you don't agree with. And if you decide like, wow, I really don't like this, now you have something to speak to. Why don't you like it? Instead of just saying, well, I don't like that and I'm not going to do that. That's immature. Nobody wants to listen to that. Have some teeth to back up why you're doing what you're doing.
Right.
Learn how to communicate. Oh my gosh. People love to communicate.
On a side note, okay, a side note from all of this, if you have not thought about being a motivational speaker, that's probably something you should do, because I have never, it's really hard to kind of pull me in. Like,
the new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
With people when they talk. But I'm just sitting here like, this girl is speaking right to me right
Thank
now.
You. Thank
and I
you.
Need to listen to this. So that's really awesome. That's very good advice. Definitely very good advice. And I'm so glad that, like, you touched on the fact that farriers need to know more than just your average, what people assume farrier duties. You know, what is something, aside from all of the other lessons that you said, what is something that was probably your biggest lesson? Something that just was a huge turning point for your career, whether it was horse-related or business-related. Was there anything that just substantially happened and stood out to you that just said, okay, we're going to do something different. We've got to do it.
I'm trying to think of, like, probably in this last year, I had this moment of, I don't know where I'm going and what I want to do at this point. And I felt like I was burnt out of the industry. And I've been told that as you get closer to 10 years, you have this, like, epiphany moment where you either stop farrier work or you push through and you figure something else out. It was probably like realizing that I'm in control of this. I'm the one that's running my business. I can dictate what I want to do, how I want to do it, the clientele that I would like to work with, all of those things. It's not just my schedule. I'm in charge of that. If I need to take a break, I can do that. I can arrange my schedule so I can take a break. If I don't, am not happy going and working with a client, I can let that client go. And I got in this headspace of like, I have to have all these horses and I have to do all these things and I have to run my business this type of way. I don't have to. I'm the one that's in control of all of that. And it was like, oh, yeah. Isn't that the whole point of running your own business?
I have free will. Stop it.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, what? So really this year, I finally just like, oh, I popped my head above water and realized that, hello, you're the one that's doing this. You can control it. If there's something that you don't like, you can change it. It's okay. So that's kind of been like the pivotal moment very recently for me.
Cause you know what? This is so funny. You're talking about that. I was meant to speak to you. So, you're right though. I think we, not only as females that work for ourselves, okay, because we've already got it harder at the gate, but when you're pushed into a certain area of any industry where you do have some, like, I don't want to say the wrong word, pushback, I guess, like certain women in the horse training industry can be a certain way and just certain things, it's not that you feel the need to prove yourself or feel the need to keep up. It's like you know that you're better than that, and so you try to stay at this certain level that's almost unrealistic, even though you're doing
it, but you're doing it though.
So you, like, it dawns on you, like, oh shit, I've been doing this for this long at this level, and it's literally done nothing for me in the sense of an outside perspective, because this person on this TikTok said it the other day, burnout is where your efforts are not getting what you expect they should be getting.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start feeling like you hate it, that's burnout. And it's like what you just said. You sit there and you go, wait, hold on a second. I don't have to do this. Why do I feel the need to be this way?
And
exert so much out there. I can take it back. You know, like, what's
a powerful moment when you realize that.
Yeah, but it's like, it's almost so common sense, it's almost like so like normal that other people are like, they'll look at you and be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Nothing. I just realized that it's okay.
yeah, and it's all, we do this to ourselves. It's all in our own head. I'm sure that nobody else is thinking the things that I'm thinking about myself. I'm my own worst critic. I don't post half the things that I do or say or whatever because I'm worried about whatever other people are thinking. But they're probably not thinking the same things about me, and I just put that all on myself and crush myself for what reason, I don't know, because we just, society and whatever else, but yeah, this, changing the mindset.
It's good that you care. It's good that people care, because that's really what, if you care enough to do that much for other people, not just your own business, but for the, even in the industry, like everything that you're doing affects all of it. You know, if you didn't care, you'd just be a bad farrier and it would all just whatever. But the fact that you care, that's what I think gets frustrating with the burnout, because you realize that other people don't care as much as you do.
Yeah.
And it sucks because you're not caring for approval. You're not doing it for any other reason except just to be the best that you can be. And it almost makes you question yourself, like, okay, well, if they don't care, then why am I doing this?
Mm-hmm. I've changed the clientele that I take on for, as part of that. The clients that I have want better for their horses. They want to know everything. They ask all the questions. They will take a rasp and work on their horses in between cycles. They will learn how to put a glue on shoe or take a shoe off, put a couple nails in if they need to. Those are the people that I want to work with. The people that care about their horses like I care about their horses.
Right.
I can't care more. I can't care more than you care, or else it's not successful.
Right. Just like the pony that we were talking about. Like, you can't, that's just draining you.
Yeah.
It's draining you, and you shouldn't have to put up with that, because...
And I have 300 other horses that I put the same amount of effort in. I can't let it all go to one and it take me out. I have too many other horses that I need to take care of that I want to take care of, so I have to change my energy.
Right. So when are we going to start the farrier clinics? I mean, we're going to start the motivational horse industry.
I do some now. I work with a barn up in Hanover where we'll do educational clinics as often as they want to do it. But yeah, I try to do, if I have people that are interested in it, I will put on little clinics, and yeah, it's starting to get that way.
What's one of the biggest things that you do not want people to do at home? And what are some of the things that you would, you know, if somebody's going to do something, what are some of the things that you be like do and don't?
As far as like farrier care on their own horses?
Yes.
Really, I don't have a problem with anybody doing anything as long as I've shown them how to do it first and we can walk through it and then they have the understanding, you know, now it's your responsibility. So if you choose to pick up a rasp and you want to do this to your own horse,
right,
this is now your responsibility. Here we are. I try to be as accessible as I can within reason. So if they have questions, like my clients can FaceTime me, they can call me, text me, whatever. That way I'm making sure that they're doing it correct as well. But if we've already walked through something and they feel confident in doing it, they can do it.
Right.
I would rather them, first of all, it's job security, because a lot of people figure out that this is a really hard job, and when their horses are sometimes not very nice, they realize what I put up with.
Yeah, no.
Well, no, I prefer for them to be active participants in their horse's care and be empowered to do so. I think that's hugely important for the betterment of the horses, the farrier industry, and the horse industry as a whole.
Yeah.
Be more involved.
Well, at least to know would be better than to not know versus not knowing and trying to do it. I would at least rather know and still pay somebody, you know, just to understand so that you can see things and understand things and stuff like that. But you're like, that's basic. I've actually had this conversation before. I'm glad you said that because I don't think people realize, like when I sell stuff online, sometimes they'll be like, can I just come pick it up? And so I have to start doing math. I have to be like, look, this is your shipping charge and this is what you're going to spend trying to save that shipping charge. Oh, okay, never mind, ship it. There you go. Time's money, right? So if you're going to try to do something yourself, like, you know, take something on yourself or whatever to save the money, 9 times out of 10, it's not even worth it. Just go ahead and pay somebody to do it so that you can do something else, you know? So, because you're right, it is job security. People are like, oh, I can do it. No.
Whenever anybody says that, I put the foot down and I hand them a rasp and I show them how to get into farrier stance. And I show them the position, and I say, okay, go ahead and rasp. And they're like, wait, I can't do it. It's harder than it looks. We have worked really hard to make it look easy. We do. A skilled farrier is a beautiful thing to watch. They just make it look flawless. But I can tell you, the first time I trimmed a foot, it took me 45 minutes. Okay? One foot, 45 minutes. 8 years later, I could have done it worse in 10 minutes.
You are right, though, because I remember seeing, like, I grew up around them, but we don't have them now, but I remember watching, I used to watch Rick sometimes, it would just be like, foot done, of course, we had good horses, knock on wood, you know, we didn't have issues, but it was literally like a dance, like, he could, like, it was just, like, the back of his hand that he could just do it, and, you know, like, no, I'm good. We'll let y'all do your thing. I'm not doing
it. What goes through our heads, too, is we have, so some horses are caught and ready to go and are already standing, but we evaluate that horse immediately. We are looking at their posture. We're looking at how they're standing. Are they shifting weight? What's their body language? Are they comfortable? Are they not comfortable? Most of us, we know what that horse's foot is going to look like before we even pick the foot up. We watch that horse walk to us. We watch that horse walk away from us. We know exactly how they're loading and landing, how their posture is, their conformational issues. We are evaluating in 10 seconds. And that's why we can pick a foot up and do it as quickly as we can, because we've already assessed the horse before it's even gotten to us. And that, I don't think people understand that. I mean, we're doing a lot. And then we're sitting there and talking to you and being therapists while we're trying to do all this very hard work.
Y'all are like the hairdressers of the horse industry. I know.
Some things.
I know. I've talked mine's head off before. But that's actually cool you just said that, because the last horse I had was a little gelding. And he obviously had something wrong with his left hind, right? The vet said it was this. I didn't even get to ride him. Long story, whatever. We just kept him bare trimmed, you know, just called the farrier and go, hey, I got a new horse. What do we need to do? And just kept him bare trimmed, right? But he was really weak on that back leg, but he wasn't very aggressive. And the farrier wanted me, he was like, I want you to come out here and I want you to see something or whatever. And he went to go pick up the foot up and he didn't want to do it. And it wasn't a matter of the horse not being able to handle it. He was good with that. He was showing me, he was like, something's wrong. This is a problem. I'm showing you like where I think the problem's at versus what your vet said. And so long story short, that's, you're very right about that. A good farrier will sit there and kind of like lead you in a direction that you didn't think.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay. He was a cute little gelding though. But no, props to you. Congratulations on having a new horse.
Thank you.
Yeah, and getting back and doing your thing. And again, I saw your TikTok and I just thought, this chick's badass and she's really cool, because you don't see a lot of women do farrier work, and I just think it's so cool to see powerful women doing this kind of stuff. And so props to you. I'm really glad that you took the time to talk to me and discuss all this kind of stuff.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,